Hi, I'm Jonathan Capehart, in today for Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. Alvin and Larry Ubell have been coming on the show longer than anyone here can remember. Somehow they started being called the gurus of how-to, but they're also known more officially as the Accurate Building Inspectors based in Brooklyn, and I'm happy to welcome them back here to the show to help us with all sorts of things that can go wrong once fall starts to creep up on us. Before we get into it, I mean, Alvin, hold on.
Yeah.
Alvin was dancing during the music, was making me laugh, and you've totally thrown me off, Alvin. If any of you out there have specific questions, you can call right now at 212-433-9692 or send a tweet. Our handle is at Leonard Lopate, and you can also find us on Facebook. Now, just yesterday for the first time, I smell the heat going on here at work. What sorts of things need to be done for heating equipment? Let's just dive right on in.
Well, the first thing that one has to do is you have to do your yearly tune-up. So if you have a gas burner or an oil burner, it's now's the time, because we really don't need the heat that much yet. So if there's something wrong with it, it's better to find out now, especially if they have to order parts, if they have to get equipment, or the worst case scenario, if it has to be replaced, because with a forced air heating system, you could have a cracked heat exchanger, or you can actually have a leak in your system and you have to replace it. So now would be the time to call the HVAC guys, the heating contractors, the plumbing contractors, before the heating system rolls in and you won't be able to get them on the phone anymore.
And also, cleanliness is next to saving energy. You got to clean out the radiators, get a vacuum cleaner, take all the dirt away. If you have a couch in front of a radiator, pull the couch away a little bit, about a foot and a half, so let that heat come out of that radiator and distribute it in the building. If you cover up those radiators, like putting up a blanket around it, and you're stifling it from functioning. So that's one of the major things you have to do.
Now, a lot of this really has to do with people who own homes who control their own heating systems. On the other hand, if you're part of a bigger building, especially a pre-war building, most people complain they have way too much heat.
It's like way Bermuda, Jamaica hot in some places.
I know.
They got that New York thermostat.
Well, I have to say, I've said
it's February before, and the windows are open.
Well, yeah, exactly. When I go to conferences about home inspectors and things like that, and there's a joke, what's a New York City thermostat? A window. And that's bad, but that has to do with a whole other issue of balancing a building and getting it operating properly. So let's not get into that so much. But for people who own their own systems, there are some apartments these days. Developers are building apartments with their own heating systems that they get to control their own thing, at their own temperatures and things like that. Those people need to do the tune-ups now.
You know, I had to add, because I don't live in New York anymore, but I remember
Why not?
Because I live in Washington now. Trust me. But in some of my apartments, you know, you knew it was wintertime when the radiators started clanging.
Clang.
I mean, there is a certain, you know, like romantic feel to it the first day.
Yeah. So not at 2 in the morning.
No, not at all. But why did that happen?
Well, first of all, if it's a clanging or banging or something like that, that usually means that it's a steam system. And what happened is when the steam comes through, that's usually above 212 degrees, and all of a sudden there's water lingering in that pipe from yesteryear, the year before, and all of a sudden you have the water and the steam collide, cold water that's at room temperature, which is about 70 degrees, and what happens is the steam starts to contract very rapidly, and it starts banging the pipes. That's what's taking place inside the pipes. That means that the pipes are not pitched properly so that the condensate goes back to the boiler automatically. So those are the problems.
But you brought up a great problem or common problem, which is a lot of times the radiators are not pitched properly, and you have to pitch the radiator so the water drains out of the radiator. And what's perfect for that is you actually get a crowbar, you lift up the radiator, and then you put little checker pieces underneath the legs. You lift it up.
Or bottle caps.
But you need a lot of them.
and who has bottle caps these days?
Exactly. Well, that's good. Well, if you're a beer drinker.
Okay, see, now you know my taste.
Okay, so you lift up the end of the radiator and the water drops out because, like my father said, is what you're hearing there is what we call flash boiling. The water dives into the the cold water hits the hot steam and it flash boils the water in the pipe. The problem is you're boiling water in a confined space.
Right.
So what happens? It bangs. It makes noise. It moves the pipes. It does a lot of bad.
I wish I knew this checkers thing 20 years ago.
Yeah, that would.
Who knew? In your own building. I thought it was like there's somebody in the basement wrench, and it just happened.
It sounds that way. It really does. It sounds that way.
Well, that's it. You really have to take care of the heating system. And I've said it over and over again. Cleanliness is not only next to godliness, but it's also next to saving energy, save money, and it's good for our environment.
And I want to just say one other. People have forced air heating systems. Pull your filters out. If you can't see through the filter or you can't see the original color, usually these filters are blue or white. Mm-hmm. If they're now gray, it's time to replace them. Okay.
And one other thing before we start taking calls, and I remind people 212-433-9692 or send us a tweet at Leonard Lopate. All right. So what's the story with underground heating oil tanks and why can they be so dangerous?
Because
they're, if you're buying a home, and this has come up for me inspecting homes 3-4 times within the last month. Where I'm inspecting a home, and all of a sudden I notice a vent sticking out of the ground, like you see at gas stations, a single vent, or you'll see a filler on the ground or coming out of the foundation, you'll see copper tubing. And the problem is that's an indication that there may be an abandoned oil tank, which may or may not be filled with oil, which may not have been abandoned properly, which may still be present, and could be leaking. And if it's leaking, that could be hundreds of thousands of dollars cost to clean up, because you have to find out how big the plume is. There was a story about a person out Long Island. They bought a house. This is years ago, before insurance companies excluded environmentals. Now they exclude all environmentals, but back then they didn't. And this plume was so large that the cleanup costs were nearly $1 million.
Wow.
The insurance company wrote the couple a check for $250,000, the cost of the house, and said, "You're on your own."
Wow.
Yeah, so it is a big deal. And it's easy to discover. It's easy to deal with. If like in these couple of situations that I found, we just hire someone out there and they go out there with a scanner, or they dig up the top of the tank to see if it's still there. The cost of it, but the liability to our client if they buy the house and they don't know, could be catastrophic. It could be more than any other bad thing I find in the house.
Wow. So are you, Larry, Alvin, are you ready for calls?
Yeah.
Well, the audience loves to figure out what the word may be. And this is the word of the month. What is the name of the structural element used to support a structure when the subsoil at the site is unstable for the intended load, or a required structure is to be placed in an underwater or wet environment?
It sounds like a math problem.
It is a simple problem which is known for thousands of years how to do this. And
it's not like when two trains leave.
One headed to Chicago, the other went to Augusta. Let's go to Mark from Jersey City.
Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hi. So I have a question about bleeding the pipes on a heating system.
Yes.
We have a dedicated boiler for our condo apartment.
Great.
And a baseboard heating system. And so when it goes on, it makes a lot of watery sounds.
Gurgling,
like you're on a boat.
That's like an air embolism kind of creation.
Well, the problem is when they build these hot water systems, which I love hot water systems. They are my favorite favorite heating systems, because they warm the temperature. They kind of warm the air to a cooler level. They don't dry the air out as much, and they're quiet, except for your case, the gurgling. What you need to do is you need to put an air bleeder valve. When you walk around the apartment and you hear the gurgling, listen to where it's the worst. And at that location, at the end of the radiator, you need to have a plumber put in an air bleeder valve so you can bleed the air out if there's not one there. Now, a inexpensive, easy way to do that is I did this for my sister in their weekend house, where they had the same situation. And you buy one of these saddle fittings, valve saddle fittings that you use for a ice maker, and it actually, you put it over the copper pipe and you tighten it in and it makes a small hole, and then you open the valve up, let the air out, and then close it up again, and you put in a bleeder valve without having to do a soldering job.
You also could buy, well, you could also buy an automatic bleeder valve into that same saddle fitting that will automatically bleed out the air so that the water can pass through. You have to realize that if you have air inside the pipe, the water can't pass through. And when it does pass through, it makes that gurgling sound.
What were you going to ask?
Oh, so I don't have a radiator, though. We have a baseboard system, so it
right.
just blows through the pipe. So that saddle will work on this, too?
Well, at the end piece.
At the end piece, where the pipe goes back down into the ground, into the floor?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you could probably put it on there. You want to put it on the... Well, if you take off the cover of the radiator, there are the fins there, and right before the fins end, there should be a small piece of exposed copper pipe. You could put it over there.
Okay, because I bleed this regularly.
Where do you bleed it?
I go down, but it always just comes back again.
But that's only at the boiler, correct?
And the air goes up
to
the top.
Hold on. That's only at the boiler, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, the problem is that the air is all at the top above the boiler, or, you know, it's not there's up highs and lows, and the air wants to just stay where it is, and so you have to try to get it out from where this embolism is, as my father put it, and that's sometimes an issue.
It's usually at the highest point of the highest radiator or the upper level of the building.
Or if the radiator is lower than a high point.
Yes,
that
true.
Happens too.
Okay. I'll check it then. We're on the top floor, so that probably doesn't help.
Well, where are the boilers? In the basement?
In the basement. And when I bleed it,
yeah,
the sound goes away for about 4 or 5 days, and then air gets back in.
Yeah, because probably you need to get a plumber in there to put an automatic bleeder in one of the radiators upstairs and just call it a day.
Very good. Thank you.
Plumbers can do that. That's pretty easy to do.
All right, Mark. Yeah. Thank you for your call and your question. Now, Anna in Greenpoint.
Hey, Anna, what's up?
Hi, yes. I'm a renter in an apartment with a refrigerator that's about 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it recently stopped freezing things when I took the temperature. It's at hovering between 32 and 33 degrees in the freezer.
Uh-huh.
And in the fridge, it's about 50 degrees. I was wondering if it has to do with the condensation coil or if there's something I can do to clean it to improve performance or if I just need to replace it.
One thing I want to ask, when was the last time you defrosted it?
I haven't really done any maintenance on it since
Is there ice buildup on the inside of the freezer?
Only recently because we've been messing with the temperature, trying to get it to cool.
On the bottom, in the freezing compartment, there's a bottom floor of that freezing compartment where all the coils are. And sometimes that gets a little wet and the ice fills up with that. And that stifles the refrigeration factor to the food compartment. So what happens is the best thing to do is you have to really shut down the refrigerator, pull out the plug, or there is no real switch. But if you pull out the plug and let the thing melt down, that tray on the bottom, if you take out all the frozen food and put it aside for a little while, there's just a couple of screws. If you could pick that up and have that all cleaned out, because there's sometimes a lot of muck and gook into that thing that accumulates over the years. The other thing is the back of the refrigerator or on the bottom of the refrigerator, there are what they call condenser coils. They have to be clean. You can clean them with a vacuum cleaner or a brush or something like that. If you keep those clean, more than likely the freezing compartment should only be about 0 degrees, and the fresh food compartment should only be about 40 degrees. And you should get tiny little thermometers that you can place both in the freezing compartment and in the food compartment in order to monitor what the temperatures are.
Yeah, but the cleaning of the coils and probably defrosting the refrigerator freezer would probably help.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
No problem.
All right, Anna, thank you very much. Now we're going to go to Barbara in Brooklyn.
Hi, Barbara.
Hello.
Hey, what's up?
I have a very complicated problem. I hope you can help me. I've lived here for about 6 years. I have my apartment is L-shaped. The two rooms that are nearest the front door are not as bad as the two in the back, which is the one room and bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not been using for quite a long time the back room, last room at all. It says 68-70 at this time of year, but it is really a meat locker.
Uh-huh.
And I am not exaggerating.
Okay.
And I had two leaks in the front room, mm-hmm. and they came and all they did was do, well, I have a Section 8 apartment and they had 15 citations.
Mm-hmm.
And what I heard on the radio is if you keep having leaks, it's not from the walls, it's from the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Now I see in the front room, it's I'm looking at the base because it feels cold on that side more than it has in other years.
Okay,
let me ask you a question.
So let me ask you a question. One of the things that you need to do is that you need to, A, document the temperature and by putting thermometers in those rooms. But the next thing you have to do, you're renting, correct?
Yes.
And unfortunately, if there is a problem, like, let's say is there radiators in these rooms?
Yes.
And the radiators don't get hot?
No, the radiators get hot. And it's even worse when the steam is off. It can be 50 degrees outside and it's 40 degrees inside.
Okay, but I'm saying is, do the radiators get hot?
Yes.
And when they're hot, does the room get warm?
It does, but the windows aren't great either. It's windy, it goes right out.
Okay, so what you need to do is document the temperature of the rooms and have a log, and then once you create a consistent log, at that point it's time to call up HPD and the buildings department and start complaining about your landlord, because there's nothing that we can do that there's a recommendation, because you're not in control of the heating system. I mean, you could try putting plastic over the windows to try to keep some of the heat in, but the real systematic problem here is that you're not getting enough heat, and probably the reason is that they're not keeping the heat on the on cycle long enough so the building heats up sufficiently. And so you need to contact the buildings department about this.
You could, but the best way to do is call 311 and let them document and connect you with HPD or whatever department. This way it'll be documented in their computer and they can't deny that they didn't get called.
Okay.
The gurus of how to, Alvin and Larry Ubell, are here to take your calls. As you know, if you have a question about home repair, give us a call at 212-433-9692. You can also write us on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate. Or Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We'll hear more after a break. I'm Jonathan Capehart. In today for Leonard Lopate, this is WNYC and WNYC.org. Back. I'm Jonathan Capehart. In today for Leonard Lopate, this is WNYC and WNYC.org. We are talking with Alvin and Larry Ubell, gurus of how to. In that answer to Barbara, Larry, you talked about sealing windows to keep the cold air out, and that made me wonder, how do you keep, is that the only way to keep cold air from leaking through windows?
Well, the thing that the dirty little secret about windows are, windows do two things very badly: insulate and protect. Okay, they're really bad at both of those things. The funny thing is that the R value, or resistance to heat loss, of a window is incredibly little. And what I'm saying, really, I don't want to get in too much in the weeds, but a typical wood frame house that has a stud wall with, let's say, vinyl siding on the outside and drywall on the inside, has an R value of anywhere between 11 and 15. A ceiling system, like an attic or whatever, will have an R value of anywhere between 20 and 40, depending on how much insulation. A window, a regular single glass window, has an R value of 1. Okay, a double insulated glass window, like a Peller, an Anderson, a Marvin, Acorn, whatever, 2.
Or 3.
No. Three only if you put all the coatings on it.
That's right.
Okay. Okay. If you have a triple.
Who has a 10? Like, what's the highest level?
No. It tops out at a triple glazed window with all the coatings, reflective coatings, at 5. That's it. So all these Anderson impellers, everyone thinks that they're putting in like these inefficiency things that's going to save them tons of energy. I have found through interviewing people and talking and doing tests that people will replace all the windows in their house. They used to have an old wood double hung window, and now they've replaced it with a double insulated glass. They've taken off the triple track storm and screen, and their heating bills go up because now their windows are nice and thin and sexy looking. It's like the difference between wearing a nice woolly parka and now wearing a cashmere sweater. A cashmere sweater looks amazing,
but it's not in Winnipeg.
Yeah, but it's not keeping you warm, and so. These are the issues that go on. So as far as windows, now this woman, she may have other issues also. The single glass window, obviously low energy resistance to energy loss. But also there could be leaks around the frame. There could be missing putty in the glass. You know, the putty that holds the glass in place. If you have a 6/6 window, you have all those little window panes that are held in by putty. They're leaking and missing. The cork around the outside is gone. So there could be a lot more issues than just the window. Being bad.
But the replacement windows are really good for stopping drafts. Mm-hmm. You know, a new aluminum or vinyl window will work nicely. It'll fit better. In other words, you won't get a window draft from the windows. Mm-hmm. But there's still the heat loss. You have to understand that what you really have when you have a house filled with heat is like having a tank full of water. And as soon as there's a hole in that, the water runs out. Well, heat goes to a place of less heat, and that's the way it works. When there's something that has less heat on one side, the energy from that heat will try to go to the place that has less heat in order to balance it out. This is a natural phenomenon. The word cold really is a fictitious word. It doesn't mean anything. What you have is either a place with more heat or a place with less heat, and that's the differential.
And because of all that energy, all that heat energy moving around the house, it creates currents. And that's why people say, oh, I feel drafty. It's not necessarily that it's cold air that's running around. It's actually the room temperature air creating a current, and it evaporates the moisture off your skin, which is an evaporating process. That's why we sweat. And so it makes you feel cold when you want to be warm. And so there's a lot going on here. And also buildings have a phenomenon called stack effect, where the warm air from downstairs wants to go up and out of the building. So it's drawing cold air through the bottom and pushing it out through the top. And there's no way you can stop that phenomenon either.
So yeah. The person in that top part of the building is on fire.
It's the same reason why a piece of wood floats on the water. What happens is when the air is heated, it has less molecules per cubic feet. So it's lighter. So it goes up like that's why you have those hot air balloons that work so well.
Yeah.
Whew. Okay. So we've got Paul who's on he thinks he's got the answer to the quiz.
Okay.
Let's go.
What do you think it is, Paul?
Is it a caisson?
No.
Wow, close.
No, close, but no cigar.
Okay, well, now keep listening.
Thanks for listening.
Hey, you know, Alvin, is it too much to read the clue again?
I'll let you read it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, this is like sports for me.
Yeah. Right.
What is the name of the structural element used to support a structure when the subsoil at a site is unstable for the intended load, or when a required structure is to be placed in an underwater or wet environment? We should play the Jeopardy music.
Well done.
Okay, so somebody else has an answer.
Yeah.
Rose.
What do you think it is, Rose?
Hello?
Yeah, what do you think it is?
I think it's pilings.
Well, we knew this one wasn't going to be hard, but how did you know?
She's smart. I had no idea.
Right? Yeah, but I have to say that the reason we picked this one is because we wanted to talk about piles for a moment. Piles are an amazing structure. What it allows us to do is this was how they were actually able to build MetLife Stadium, is because of piles. All of MetLife Stadium is sitting in the middle of a wetland. How could you build a structure that weighs thousands and millions of tons on wetlands? They drive piles down through the wetlands until they hit bearing soil.
Wow.
That's as hard as the soil that we have at the Earth here. See, in New York City, we have rocks that we're building on, and we have all that substrata that's really dense. But out in the wetlands, It's wetlands. Wow. Same thing Canarsie, Brooklyn. Same thing in parts of Staten Island, all over in Queens. So the soil is not good, but we want to develop it. The World Trade Center mm-hmm. area where they filled in that whole area, Battery mm-hmm. Park City. That's all fill. They had a dry pile through
How
that.
How far down are we talking?
Sometimes as much as 100 to 200 feet down. Usually it's less. Usually it's like 50 or 60 feet, but it could be a lot.
But it also what's really great about what the piles are. Piles go back almost a couple of thousand years, and they used to be driven in by manpower, a sledgehammer, and that was very difficult. But today we have the steam engines or the electrical engines mm-hmm. and whatever we have in order to drive the piles. But in order to get those wind farms out in the ocean
right.
and in the bays and everything else, they have to drive piles all the way down in order to build a platform in order to put their equipment on top of it.
So next time you go past a construction site, look at what's sticking out. And a lot of times you'll see groupings of these wood or steel or concrete things sticking up out of the ground. And that's what they put the foundation mm-hmm. on for the building. And they build it across that whole – it's basically like a big bridge over dirt.
To make it very simple, a pile is no different than driving a nail into a piece of wood. When you drive a nail into it, it's the frictional resistance against the nail that prevents you from pulling it out or pushing it even further in.
Okay, so you know what happened? Rose hung up. Rose, you got to call us back so we can get your address so you can – the new bells can send you the prize that you've won.
And the prize is – my dad wrote a book called Save Money, Save Energy, and he wrote that with George Merlis, and you'll get a copy of that.
Yes.
Oh, that's terrific. Shoot, I wish I had gotten the answer right. I could have won. let's go to Jeff in Manhattan.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes. Hi. I live in a pre-war 15-story building on the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
Uh-huh.
Just put in a new radiator,
mm-hmm.
steam heat.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's called a closed system. There's no vents on the radiators. The steam just comes in one side and goes out the other.
It's a two-pipe system, but go on, continue.
Pardon?
It's a two-pipe system.
Yeah. And they put it in level. And the contractor's telling me that because it's not the kind of radiator that's vented, it doesn't have to have a pitch.
That is correct. Is it banging?
It's brand new, so it wouldn't be banging yet.
Well, actually, if it was a single pipe system and it was brand new and it was pitched wrong, it would be banging.
Oh, okay.
But if it's pitched back. It could be level, but if it's pitched slightly back from the impact, that will cause banging.
If you have it pitched. But you have a steam trap at one end of it, I believe. And so it should be pitched slightly toward the trap or level toward the trap. But if it's level, it should work fine.
Okay.
Okay.
And the other question is the way they installed it, they have the steam coming in at the bottom of the radiator.
Right.
And in every other apartment in this old building, the super is telling me they have like a 2-foot pipe coming out of the floor so that, with a valve on the top of it so that the steam can come in to the top of the radiator. Does that make any difference?
Yes, it does. It should. The steam should come in at the top of the radiator and drain out through the bottom where the steam trap is.
That's right.
Yeah, that is backwards.
And if they put an air valve on top of that radiator, like you said, they are defeating the purpose of a two-pipe system.
Yeah. Did he say that they're going to put an air valve
in? They have it on some of the radiators, he just said.
Oh, not the air valve, the shut-off valve.
The shut-off valve.
Oh, the shut-off valve. Okay.
Yeah, I thought he said an air valve. Yeah, the shut-off valve should be at the top of the radiator. And the steam trap should be at the bottom on the opposite side.
Well, they're telling me it makes absolutely no difference. What kind of problem will it cause?
It could cause banging.
I see.
But again, it may not.
It may or may not.
I mean, the radiator gets real hot. If there's no banging, is it okay?
Yeah.
Yes, leave it alone.
If it's working and it's not making noise, leave it alone.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right. All right, Jeff, thank you very much. And a reminder to Rose, call us back so you can get your prize for getting the answer. Let's go to Christine in New Jersey.
Hey, Christine, what's up?
Hi. Closing out a house in October 21,
uh-huh.
two of the rooms have radiant heating. The house was built in 1958. Radiant heating does not work well, very, very poor.
Mm-hmm.
I've had two HVAC folks come out, well, an HVAC folk and a plumber,
mm-hmm.
and one of them said, oh, it's going to cost you thousands to fix this. I think you should just scrap it and cap it and drain it and be done.
Uh-huh.
The other guy said, well, you know, it may work, it may not work. Different people are recommending.
Can I ask a question? Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Is this a radiant floor heating that's in a concrete slab?
It is.
Yeah, I'm going with the scrap it and forget about it, because there's a couple of problems. One, back in the 1950s, they didn't put insulation underneath the coil, so a lot of the heat is going down and you're wasting your money. The other problem is that it's probably copper coils in concrete, and concrete is now known to deteriorate copper. So eventually it's going to leak. I would have to say that probably your best option is to abandon it in those rooms and put in either, and I'm going to go from cheapest to more expensive, baseboard radiators or cast iron recessed in the wall radiators, or now they make flat panel radiators. And if you go on the internet and just Google flat panel radiators, they're really attractive. And so there are lots of options as far as radiator options, but the radiant floor, the reason it doesn't work well is that back then they didn't worry about insulation, and there's no insulation. Now if you're putting in a radiant floor heating, the first thing you do is you put down foam board insulation, then you lay down your grid for the reinforced concrete, and then you hook the tubing to that grid, and then you pour your concrete, and that forces all the heat up. Okay?
Yeah, I think there's about 4 inches worth of concrete between the...
Yeah, you leave the floor alone. Don't even touch the floor. Leave the coils alone. Just cut them off and run new pipes for your new radiators.
Okay, so you would recommend the big furnace, big boiler,
yeah,
bigger than the house needs.
Yeah.
You would recommend going that route as opposed to putting, say, electric heaters or...
Well, where do you live? In New York here?
New Jersey, suburbs.
Yeah, well, it's way cheaper to heat. I mean, the initial cost may be higher, but the operating cost electric is like the most expensive way to heat. You know, it's just expensive. And so if you were running oil or gas, it's way cheaper to run those products for heating than it would be for running electric. So that's just my humble opinion.
Okay, so I've been recommended either the tying into the furnace with continuing the hot water heating,
yeah,
baseboard around,
right?
Or the other one you said was the flat. Is that tied
flat
to the same?
No, it's a flat. It's the same thing. It runs water. Just the radiators come in different varieties: baseboard radiators, cast iron radiators, or flat panel radiators.
The flat panel radiators really look very pretty, and they really put out a lot of heat.
That's our opinion.
All right, Christine, thank you.
Thank
you for your call. So how can people like Christine and Jeff and Mark get contact
with you?
Well,
the best way is to email me at larryubell@gmail.com. And if you're going to do that, include your telephone number, because it's way easier to have a conversation with you than to generate 27 emails. And so, because every email, every question, there's another answer and a question and back and forth until you find, as you can see when we're talking to these people, you have to ask more questions. And so it's kind of a diagnosis. So definitely include your telephone number. If you don't, I'm probably not going to call you.
and it's Larry Ubell, UBELL, @gmail.
Yeah, one word.
All right. So, Alvin and Larry,
mm-hmm,
I understand you have a traditional sign-off here on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Yes. We always tell all of America how to go forth and fix.
Save money and energy and do it safely.